Good evening. So I came to Lancaster in 1985, was in this very college as an undergraduate, and then really when I graduated in 1988, I desperately didn't want to get a job. So I came back and was offered the opportunity to do a PhD in biological sciences as it was at the time. And then during my time as a postgraduate, I ended up as assistant dean in Drysdale. And really, I fully intended to go and pursue a career in research and stay within academia. But when I got towards the end of my postdoc, the state of science in the UK at the time was very much one of, if you weren't a molecular biologist or you weren't a geneticist, jobs were very, very few and far between. So I was looking at the situation that I had. The only jobs I could get were temporary contracts. So I was looking at 18-month contracts at various universities, and I had to move on every 18 months, 2 years. And then if I was lucky, potentially get a job as a lecturer, again, not knowing where I was going to end up. So when I was an undergraduate, I got very involved with a lot of the entertainment that was going on within the college. It was the end of term extravs, we used to get very involved with that. We played in various bands, and I was actually in a band with John, who used to play his first in a very Peter Gabriel style. And I'd always kind of been interested in the music and the technology side of the music. I was a guitar player when I was a kid, my dad was a very keen photographer. And when we were in the bands, I was the only bloke that actually knew how to plug the speakers in that we were renting from various people. And through that relationship that we garnered with local rental companies, I ended up basically working part-time at weekends to augment the meagre grant that I was given at the time. I don't know why I'm complaining about a grant, they don't exist anymore, do they? I won't moan about that at all. And through meeting a local rental company that was based in Goldgate that we used to rent speakers from, literally one Saturday morning, this chap called Robin Turnbull phoned me and said, "I've been let down this afternoon, could you give us a hand with a show that I've got over in Colne?" And that really was the first day of my career, because I did that one show with him and just went, "I absolutely love this, this is fantastic." So after 10 years of university and doing a degree, a PhD, and 3 years as a postdoc, the conversation with my mother on the phone one lunchtime when I said, "Mom, I want to be a roadie." That went well. But really, my career path actually started right where we sat in this room, because this was the first place I ever mixed a band, in this very room and also in the square outside. And it was a case of, my industry is very much, you can't advertise in it. It's very much based on word of mouth and reputation and really being in the right place at the right time. And myself and a friend, we basically spent some money and bought a little bit of PA equipment and started doing all of the sounds for all of the college extras that were happening in the summer and various other events that were going on over the course of the year in all the different colleges. And when we did stuff in the Great Hall for the grad balls and this kind of thing, we would sub-rent equipment from a company in Manchester, which again developed another relationship with a bigger company. And then subsequently, literally about 6 weeks before the end of my postdoc was due to finish, this company phoned me and said, "We're short of somebody to do a tour. Would you be able to come and do it for us?" And that was, again, that was the first real kind of professional tour that I ever did in 1995. So it was very much, it was literally been just a case of being in the right place at the right time and somebody being short of people and thinking, "Well, he seems to know what he's doing." Now, in terms of starting a business as or thinking of starting a business, you know, you're in a relatively, a much better position than I was in, because you have a great marketing tool that didn't exist when I was starting a business, and that you have the internet. The things that you really have to consider when you're thinking about whether you want to be self-employed is how much of your life you want to commit to it, because it is 100% commitment. And when you're self-employed, it's a two-edged sword, because you call the shots, you can decide how much work you do and when you do it, but if you don't do the work, you don't generate the business, you don't earn any money. And the hardest thing about being self-employed is the motivation to make profit. Because if you don't make a profit, you don't earn any money, you can't live. And that's as simple as it gets, really. I was very fortunate that the people that I ended up working for, I got on with very well. They liked what I did, and they continually kept offering me work. And my career has kind of turned full circle now, because I'm no longer self-employed. I stopped being self-employed in about 2005 for various reasons, but I ended up working for a company in America called DigiDesign at the time, who were sort of world leaders in digital recording software, and they had just released a new digital mixing desk, which I subsequently became a specialist for. So I worked for them, then I went to work for a company in Lancaster called Lee Engineering, which is down on Scotforth Road, and I worked there for a number of years, and now I work for a company based in Liverpool called Avid, and we're a big multidisciplinary production supplier, so we do everything from audio, lighting, video, manufacturing and sales, so I'm one of the senior engineers down there now. But it really is, you really have to be self-motivated. And you also have to accept the fact, when all your pals are in the pub on a Friday night, you're probably still going to be working. But the other side to the coin is that when you are employed, there's always somebody telling you what to do. Now, my mother, when I was a kid, used to nag the bejesus out of me. And as a result of that, when people tell me to do stuff, I will actively fight against doing it. And you can speak to my missus about that, and it drives her nuts. But if I decide I have to do something, it's 100% commitment. And that is really what being self-employed is all about. It's self-motivation. And you are the only person that can create the opportunities for your business to be a success. And you know, you also have to be a jack of all trades in many respects as well, because you not only do you have to develop the business, you also have to do the nuts and bolts of running the business. So you have to be an accountant, you have to be your own HR department. I used to have a Christmas party every year. We used to take myself out and congratulate myself on the 5 years' work.
Two more minutes, please.
No problem. So really, you know, it's if I could go back to being self-employed now, I'd be very happy to do that, because it's the ultimate flexibility, and I enjoy the challenge of motivating myself to succeed. The other side of the coin is as well that we unfortunately live in a culture of blame now, and when you are self-employed, you do open yourself up to potential litigation. So this is the other side of the business as well, that you have to be a lawyer, an accountant, a manager, the whole shooting match. But really, I'd highly, highly recommend it. If you're 100% self-motivated and you can drive yourself to succeed, definitely, you know, definitely. And you know, 10 minutes is up, it's gone very quickly, but please, we're going to be around, so if you want to know anything else, come and find me at the bar, we'll, you know, I'll be here for the rest of the evening.
Well, we've got 10 minutes, actually, so if anybody's got any questions that they want to ask now.
Okay.
Are you on LinkedIn?
Am I? LinkedIn. Yes, I am. Yeah. I've only just recently joined LinkedIn, actually. It's something that I haven't really sort of used very much, but yeah, last 6 months I've been on LinkedIn. Yeah, that has been quite a useful tool, because again, with what I do, it's all about word of mouth and reputation. And suddenly you have this network of, it's all people that you know, generally in our industry, because even though it's a multi-billion pound industry, it's a very, very close-knit industry, and everybody knows everybody else within it, you know. and that's where your reputation comes from, really. So yeah.
If you were starting up your business now, what other social media platforms, LinkedIn,
would you use? Definitely Facebook. You know, definitely Facebook. We you know, at AdLib we have obviously Facebook, Twitter, everything, and the amount of business that we get just through posting pictures of what we do on Facebook and Twitter. I actually have the company record for the amount of retweets. We did a product launch down in London last week at a venue called The Forum, and there was a photo of me behind a mixing desk, and it got retweeted 3,600 times. I'm quite proud of that.
So what can one do to improve his chances to be the right one at the right time?
Creating your own opportunities, really. And it is all about networking. You know, like I said, the reason that I got asked to do these sort of bigger and better jobs from time to time was because we developed relationships with bigger companies. And when we were sub-renting equipment, they were sending crew up, full-time crew from their organisations as well, who I was working with. And it was, you know, probably a conversation. Oh yeah, that Nelson, he kind of knew what he was doing last week, you know. So yeah, give him a ring. So it's literally, it can be as easy as that. But it's, I think, make yourself a pain in the neck. You know, continually phone people and just bludgeon them into giving you a bit of FaceTime to come and have a chat. Because if you phone up and you go, oh, no, we've got this, I'd really like to come in, and they go, oh, well, I'm a bit, and you go, okay, fine. You know, you've got to keep pursuing the opportunities really to make stuff happen.
What's been the highlight of your career?
There's a couple of things really. I was a great music fan, which is why I got into this industry. And when I was about 19, I went to Manchester Apollo to see B.B. King. If you haven't heard him, fabulous, fabulous blues guitar player who, you know, he's been around for a generation. He died about 2 years ago, and then just after I joined AdLib, they sent me to the Manchester Apollo to do a show with B.B. King, and I ended up mixing the show. And so it was 20 years apart from sitting in the front row of the audience watching B.B. King to the next time I saw him to actually mixing and showing in front of like 3,000 people. That's a real career highlight for me. I guess the other one was, I suppose, the first time I mixed a band in front of 80,000 people. You know, in one of the big festivals at the stadium, you know, one of the stadiums that we do. Because that's as kind of big as it gets, and that's unbelievably scary. But when it all goes great and it's all fine and everybody's happy at the end, it's a sense of achievement to have gone from doing a gig in this room to being in Wembley in front of 90,000 people mixing a show. That's a kind of really sense of achievement for me. And then the other one was, we did the opening of the Stadium of Light in Sunderland. And I'm a Sunderland boy originally, and I used to go to, you know, Roker Park and watch Sunderland every week. And it was I can only describe it as a really crap show, because it was all just pressing play and loads of bands miming, and Status Quo flew in a helicopter and all sorts of mad stuff. But the reason that it was memorable, because it was the first time that my dad had seen what I did for a living. And he was in the audience in the Stadium of Light. And again, it was, you know, massive fireworks display and the opening of the stadium, and Sunderland came out and got beat. But it was the fact that my dad was there, and once we'd finished, he came, you know, back to the hotel we were staying at and met all the guys that I was working with. And he you know, he actually phoned me the next day and said, now I understand what you do, and I understand why you left science behind. Because he said, even I was sat in the audience just getting really excited, know that you were doing what I was listening to, and Status Quo crap.
You spoke about needing to know the sort of nuts and bolts of running a business, the finance, the legal side of that sort of thing. Have you got any advice on how you go about picking up that knowledge?
I learned it through talking to other people or other friends of mine that were running a business, and made horrific mistakes. But I mean, at the time, the main thing that I had to learn was how to do accounts. because then I have to deal with the inland revenue, which the first time I dealt with that, I was convinced I was going to go to prison. Because it was just like, you know, this tax return looks like. But again, you know, at that time, the courses that were available to learn about that side of thing were very, very few and far between. And I think that side of it is—it's more, you know, I see more educational sides advertised for people wanting to learn how to. All you need to know is how to keep books, really. And the best advice I can give you is, you know, from a financial side, get an accountant straight away. Because even though an accountant will maybe cost you £800-900 a year, depending upon who you get, they'll save you five times that in what you don't pay in tax. Legally, it's a different one. I mean, you need to make sure that your insurance is covered. You know, public liability, and you know, and if you have any employees, employee liability, you really need to have those insurances in place, because the sort of things you could potentially get sued for are just ridiculous. You know, and we live in a blame culture, unfortunately. And you know, for us now at Adlib, we have to have a full-time health and safety department that just looks at what we do and how that could potentially cause legal problems. And you know, what we do is we make stuff really, really loud, and that's what we're asked to do. You know, but now there's so many cases that are starting to happen of audience members paying for tickets to go to shows and then leaving the show and saying, "You damaged my hearing," and suing not only engineers but promoters and venues. It's happening all over the world, and we have to be really, really careful. So depending upon whether you are providing a service or you're manufacturing or designing a product, is make sure that you know your backside's covered legally, because somebody somewhere will look for an opportunity to get a lot of money out of you potentially. And also the health and safety side of it is an absolute minefield. So really, you know, obviously just be safe. It is common sense, but at some point you may have to talk to health and safety consultants to make sure that you are doing all your correct risk assessments and this kind of thing as well. So it's not just a case of starting a business, writing invoices, "I'm brilliant, this product's brilliant." It's you know, 20 different aspects that you all need to be really across. And but there are now lots and lots of people around there that you can speak to get this advice. And remember that no advice is free. So if somebody's saying free consultation, it isn't really. You're going to pay somewhere. So it's better to actually, my feelings are, it's better to pay somebody to tell you what to do properly than going to see somebody to tell you what to do but won't charge you anything and probably give you bad advice.
Okay.